Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. My name is Mo. This is my Paisley Penny Arcade. I don't know why I say it's mine. It is kind of mine, but I just kind of watch over it. So after I'm gone, someone else may take it over. I don't know. Who would want it? I mean, it is a fine place to be. How are you, you fine listeners? You? My name is Mo Abdelbaki, and today is the 16th of October 2024. Welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. And yes, it is an actual penny arcade, and yes, there are actual Paisleys here. Most of them are taking a break right now just because they work so darn hard. What are Paisleys? Well, they're known as botes, and they are actually kind of little things that do little things here and there. They're little seeds of life. And we'll talk about that someday. It's kind of fascinating. But today I have a very fascinating, I think fascinating is a fascinating word. I'll probably say it sometime. Wonderful subject about elementals. What are elementals? Well, we're going to talk about elementalism a little bit, but, and tarot. Ha ha! I love tarot. I've been doing tarot for a long time in my life. And it's a fascinating subject. There it is again. Oh, that word's going to creep in a lot, I have a feeling. But that's all right. Why not? Why not? And why not? First of all, for those of you who listened to last week's show and thought, what's wrong with this guy? There was nothing wrong with me. I just am an old man and just happened to do some memory things where I talked about things that were in my memory. And perhaps some of my memory things should stay in my memory. Come out. I apologize. In a way, if it was too much, a friend of mine, I said, God, I probably was a little bit too open about some of my past. And he said, you can't be too open about your past. It's just maybe you should think a little bit about it. And I thought, nah. Actually, he was very kind. He said, you know, what the heck? What the heck? Yeah. So, you know, if I was a little too much information, I hope I didn't offend anybody, but it wasn't terribly smutty or anything. It was just talking about things I remembered. It was a strange time. The 70s were a strange time, and you know what? I'm just going to say the 2024s are a very strange time. Whew! Could they get much weirder? Could it get much weirder? Holy mackerel, it's been weird lately. I'm not going to dwell on that because I think what I'm going to talk about today is far more interesting. And that is the elements in tarot. A lot of people don't realize that tarot, which is a wonderful tool for divination and for just about anything else, you can ask the cards almost anything, and they will tell you the truth if you listen to them and you've worked with them for a while and you kind of get a feel for how to use them. They'll tell you just about anything you'd really like to know, and they tell me a lot. I work with them just about every day, and they tell me the truth, which I don't always want to know. But I do listen to them because they never lie. It's easy to lie to yourself, which most of us know, but I don't always, it's like, I don't want to know that. Don't tell me that. But I do always listen. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about what elements I'm talking about. Well, these are kind of the Aristotelian elements. Aristotle, of course, being that highfalutin Greek, as they talk about them in The Music Man, the musical of the same name. But also the Greeks were well known, especially in Greece, where they were from. And I'm being facetious. Sorry, I did not mean to say that. Facetious. Oh, my God. See, that's what happens when you get to be a little touched in the head and get old. Excuse that, please. Holy mackerel. Anyway, just getting old. But that's what happens. Anyway, so, of course, the Egyptians knew about the Greeks, and the Romans knew about the Greeks, and a lot of people knew about them. But the idea of the elements was not just the Greeks. It was to everybody. And those are basically the four major elements were fire, water, air, and earth. And then, of course, there was a fifth element, and that was known as, we're going to say spirit, okay? Also known as the fifth element, or the quint- quintessence, the quint being the fifth essence, element. So when you talk about something that is the quintessence, that is the fifth element. It's the best. It's the culmination of the other four. Now, in Hindu spirituality, in their philosophy, they have the so-called tattvas, T-A-T-T-W-A-S, tattvas. And the tattvas, they have symbols that go along with those, and those are a square and an oval and a triangle and a crescent and missing one, aren't I? And a circle. And I may have missed one there, but they're there, and they're different colors. So there's a red triangle and a blue circle and an oval that is dark blue or purple, and so on and so forth. And they represent different elements as well, fire, water, air, earth, and spirit. And the oval, the dark black or dark blue or indigo, is known as Akasha. And that is where we get the term the Akashic Records. A lot of interesting things I think you'll find today. This all blends into alchemy, which I think is a fascinating subject as well. Alchemical symbolism builds into this. You're going to find a lot of really, I think, wonderful things here today. I don't think I've talked much about Tarot on this show, but I just felt like talking about this now last week in the Power Peak. And what is the Power Peak, you may ask? If you don't read the Power Peak, it really is something you should. It's a free bit of information that you can get every week. It's Mark's Power Peak. He's been publishing this for, about 40 to 50 years. And it's always been absolutely spanking free. I think I may be exaggerating there as long as he's been doing it. But all you have to do is subscribe. So I don't know exactly how to get you there, but I think you go to 12house.com. That may be one way to get on the mailing list, and it is a mailing list, and you get it every Saturday night. And what you're getting is the secret word. It's a secret word, and then it'll take you a link to the Power Peak. You type in the secret word. It's different every week. And you can read C.A. Brooks, who is a phenomenal astrologer, as is Mark, as are so many people. And I do astrology. I do Vedic astrology, which I love. And she tells you day by day what to watch out for, which is a heroic thing to do. And then I also write. It's called Out of Mo's Mind, which used to be the name of a radio show I did, which was similar to this, but it was it made more sense, more or less sense, depending on the day. And there's writing by, I think Gracie does some writing in there, and I think that, I think a lot of people, who does those? I think other people do writing in there. I should know, because I do read it, but anyway, it's every week, and last week in the Power Peak, I write a weekly column. I wrote about the elements and about weather and nature. And so I decided to kind of carry that over today because it's a subject that fascinates me. I talked about my weather professor, my meteorology professor in college, and I just decided to talk a little bit. But it's free, and you get a weekly something to read in case you like a weekly reader. I think I can be sued for saying that, but because there is a weekly reader. I think most of you, if you grew up in the United States of America, probably got that every week, and you may have read it. So, let's talk about Tarot a little bit. I've been working with Tarot since I was, I got my first Tarot deck. I bought it at the age of 10, and it took a long time to get to my house because we changed residences. So I think I got it by the time I was around 11, the summer of my 11th year. And it was the Church of Universal Light deck, black and white with Egyptian-type figures, which is why I got out of the back of a comic book or a book or something, I don't remember now, sent away for it. And boy, was I excited, and boy, did I have to wait a long time, but it was well worth the wait. I bought my first deck in person at the Campus Shop Bookstore in Fort Collins, Colorado, in 1967 for, I believe it was $13 or something, which was a small fortune back then. You could buy a VW for about $13, but I couldn't drive. I was too young. And, kidding, you know, but it was expensive. And I bought a copy of the book, The Tarot of the Bohemians by Pappus, who was a guy named Gerard Incos, who was a Martinist and a member of many secret societies. He was French. I actually ended up knowing his granddaughter's husband, who was an alchemist and a Freemason, and claimed to be able to turn base metals into gold, and I knew several people who said he could do it. He was a sweet guy. I probably could call him and say, would you show me? And he probably would. I don't care anymore. So that's one of those things, you know. But anyway, so that was an amazing book. It was my first hermetic book. Now, remember that word, hermetic. Okay, hermeticism. So Tarot, that's been in my life for 60 years. 60 years, Tarot. Kind of an amazing thing. But Tarot started out as a game, not as anything else. Didn't start out as an omen thing or a way of reading the future or looking at anything. No, it started out as a game, and it started out in about the 13th century as just a game, gambling, actually. And tarot decks were painted. But remember, this was a time of basic havoc, because the church had a hold of everything. And for anything to get by the church had to approve. And for the church to approve, unfortunately, at that time, the church had to get a cut of something. It was very, very powerful. So, you know, basically what happened is that I'm cutting right to the chase here. I'm making it very short because I can get long-winded, as any of you who've listened to me before know. The iconography on the cards was one of usually adding church images to. And tarot decks were not standardized in the beginning. You had some decks that had 80 cards. Some decks had over 100 cards. And they would include things like the seven liberal arts and sciences. They would include things like mathematics. They would include all sorts of things just to get by. And then what you would do is you would bet. So games like bridge, for example, where you would take tricks, and games like this and games like that and rummies and, you know, whatever. And eventually, a standardized sort of deck came around that was numbered cards, which we have today, and then also trump cards that we have today. And the real standardized deck, there are many different decks out there that play different types of games that are still played to get today. So the standard deck that we have today is usually the French deck. And it is called Tarot, T-A-R-O-T. And French Tarot is played today with the... And they use actually hearts and spades and clubs and diamonds like we have. Actually, do they? No, I don't. I'm trying to remember now. I actually have a French deck right over here, but I'm not going to waste the time and grab it and look through them. I think it's the Italians that actually, for their regular playing cards, use swords, and I know the Spanish do swords and cups and so on and so forth. The Germans use bells and acorns. It's kind of fascinating when you look at playing cards from around the world. The shields are used by the Swiss. It's quite fascinating, really, when you look at the different types of playing cards. But Tarot, as we know it today, was just a game. And the French still play Tarot as we know it, see. But their deck, it's a gambling game. It doesn't have to be gambled for money. It's points. And their game, I'd like to play. I play it in an app because I would never play it against people because they would point at me and laugh a lot. They would say, oh, he's a very bad player, you know. And I'm sorry for the terrible accent, but that's what they would say, something to the effect of, something to that effect. So what happened was this. Things were encoded in Tarot. Why? Into Tarot. Why? Because of the Inquisition, because of oppression, because of what's happening now, because books were being burned. What types of books? Well, books that were heretical, books that said things like the earth was not the center of the universe, books that said things like maybe the way they're portraying God in the Bible was not exactly the way God was, books that said things that people didn't like the sound of. That's what was happening. Now, imagine a time when someone might be saying, you know, I don't like the way things are going. I would like to turn the page back. Maybe people have too many freedoms. I don't imagine such a thing. How ridiculous is it to talk about something like that? How ridiculous is it to say that there might be a time when we want to take certain laws and take those laws and do away with them. Just get done with them. We don't want people to be able to call the shots on their own bodies. We don't want people to be able to make judgments about their own sexuality. We don't want people to marry whomever they want. I mean, oh God, can you imagine such a ridiculous... It is to laugh. But things like that happened back then in the Dark Ages. People burned and banned books in the Dark Ages. People actually oppressed other people in the Dark Ages. People actually were dangerous back in the Dark Ages. People did things to other people back in the Dark Ages. People were against certain immigrations back in the Dark Ages. And things were happening a lot. So what happened is that certain books, certain very important books that dared to say things about certain other books were being shunned and banned. And so what people had to do was they had to start memorizing these books. And so they devised ways to do so, to memorize them. One of the things that they did was they created memory palaces. Now, memory palaces were extremely elaborate devices. Giordano Bruno came up with one. It was an actual entire palace that he had constructed that he then memorized the little rooms within it, and then he would put a little subject within, a mental subject within it that he wanted to memorize. And it's very complex. You can look it up. It's well worth looking up. I have a memory palace, and are there still things, bits of junk in there that I memorized years and years and years ago? And it works. Once you have it memorized, once you create it in your head, it absolutely does work. They're called mnemonic systems, ways to remember things, mnemonics. Mnemosyne was the goddess of memory in Greek mythology, you know. So this is what people had to do to keep certain bits of information alive. And so we have these people known as the Hermetics, the Hermeticists, if you will. And they decided that they needed to encode a lot of information. And some of the information that they needed to encode was very important to them. And they decided that they needed something to encode this information into. And the information they wanted to encode was, to them, very important. Now, stuff that we today might not consider to be as important as they felt the stuff they needed to encode was. So some of that information had to do with astronomy. For example, the fact that the sun was the center of our solar system and the way the planets move. For example, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, which they did not know about Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. But they figured that Saturn was the edge of the universe. And so they said, well, how are we going to, we can't get away with writing this stuff down because they find it, I'm a dead person. And that's not an exaggeration. You would be a dead person. They said, how can we do this? So they said, well, let's look at something. Here's this tree of life. That's Chaim. That's Chaim. The Hebrew tree of life. That's Chaim, part of the Kabbalah. Why don't we take this? And if you look at the Atz Chaim, and you put the sun right in the middle of it, oh, look at the sun right here, right in the middle of the Tree of Life, and that is the Sefirot of perfection, or the Sefirah of perfection. And yeah, that works out very well. And then we have, at the bottom of the tree, is Earth. And then we have Mercury and Venus and Mars, and those are the inner planets. And then we have the Sun, which is in the center of the tree. So that's the center of the solar. And it works out beautifully because they were able to say, we believe this is the actual system of the solar system. And they could do so without saying this is a heretical thing. We'd say this is just the tree of life. And they were encoding into this what they believed was the actual solar system. At the very, you see, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Because what they were saying in about the year 1400, 1500 AD is this is the solar system, and the Earth here, which everyone was saying, you know, this is the Earth, the center of everything, and everything revolves around the Earth as we are the very center of everything, you know, which was not true. And people were being, Galileo spent the rest of his life, even though the church believed him, they said, just look, we know you're right, just recant it. And he said, I'm not recanting it. So he spent the rest of his life in under house arrest. But these people wanted to write this down because they were afraid that the darkness was going to last forever. Do you realize that if the Arabs had not written down, algebra, also known as algebra, and had not written down the mathematics that they did, that most math would have been lost to us, and it would have taken a long time to recover it. But they didn't have the Dark Ages, per se, because they didn't figure that all this was crazy. But the Dark Ages was get rid of all the math, because it's the devil's work. The devil's fingertips, you know? So they kept it alive. But it was considered a form of heresy and blasphemy to tinker with mathematics, because mathematics revealed the workings, the mechanics of the universe, which was considered a form of blasphemy. So they had to keep it alive another way. And remember, the Knights Templar were actually talking to the Arabs while they were busy fighting for land. They were also talking to them and exchanging information. Very fascinating stuff, you know. So while they were burning books, they were also, these other people were creating these glyphs. And one of them was the Hermetic Tree of Life, which has amazing amounts of information into it. I can't really, don't have time today to talk about that specifically. But that is a glyph that I've studied for 50 years about. With incredible, I mean, it's just a wonderful, wonderful glyph. Aleister Crowley put together a book called Sefer Sephiroth, and it's in, there's a lot in there about it. It's a lot of information, and it's a lot of it is in tabular form, you know. And you know, you go, what's wrong with Mo? But it's called 777, and it has a lot of information, and it's like, how do you read this? You read it very slowly, and you read it over a period of years, and you go, okay, this table says this, it's colors, it's words, it's about that tree, 1 through 32. And you say, okay, this is, you know, and it's just what is on that tree, and these are things attributed to, you know, this particular place on the tree. But it's because it's so rich. They were brilliant in doing this. And they kept alive an immense amount of information that otherwise might not have made it. Just might not have made it. But it did make it. And good for us today. But anyway, Tarot was one of those things that they encoded an immense amount of information into. Why? Because that was one of the things in magical groups. The Rosicrucians were one, and the magical order, the Golden Dawn. The magical order of the Golden Dawn, which was around in the Victorian era in England. S.L. MacGregor Mathers, and Wynne Westcott, who were high-ranking British people. Wynne Westcott, I believe, was a doctor to Queen Victoria. He was a surgeon, I believe. Surgeon meaning something different, perhaps. And Mathers was also important. He was Scottish. And they started this order. Supposedly, Mathers found some papers, Rosicrucian papers, and started this magical order. And a lot of very famous people were members of that. And magic became very popular. It was a huge popular thing. Anais Nin was apparently a member of it, or Anais, I've heard it pronounced that way. Who knows? Bram Stoker was a member at one point. Conan Doyle was a theosophist, but I heard that he might have been a member. I don't know for sure. Aubrey Beardsley later on was a member of that, the famous illustrator who did some very, interesting illustrations. Fascinating illustrations, to be quite sure. But so the Tree of Life was one of them. But Tarot, what happened was they said, what we need to do is get everybody to create their own Tarot deck. And they need to, at the very end, like a PhD, when you do your PhD, you had to defend it. You had to defend your thesis or dissertation or whatever it is, I never got one, so I don't know. My dad got his, but they didn't let me go into the room, that sort of thing. So what happened is that Tarot, you had to design and create your own. And usually you had someone do it for you because not everyone was an artist to do it. I'm an artist, kind of, And so I did my own deck. And you had to be able to defend it. To say, I understand why this deck is the way it is. And that's what a brilliant idea. And that means you had to elementally understand it. And so a tarot deck has elemental forces in it and meaning in it. And by that very nature, it is filled with magic. Filled with magic. And I love that about tarot. And so what magic does it have in it, you might ask? Well, first let's talk about what is Hermeticism? Well, Hermeticism is based upon Hermes. Hermes, yes. Hermes Trismegistus, or Hermes Thrice Great. Who the heck was that guy? Well, Hermes Thrice Great, Hermes Trismegistus, that's a guy. That's a guy, supposedly, who lived, in Alexandria at the time of the Great Library. I don't believe that there was such a guy named Hermes Trismegistus, just because the mythology is kind of convoluted and blah, blah, blah. I believe Hermes Thrice Great is the accumulated knowledge of Hermes, Mercury, and Thoth, or Tut, or Tahuti, was the Egyptian god Thoth. And the knowledge, the wisdom of the Greek, the Roman, and the Egyptian empires. Right? That makes sense to me. In other words, these wonderful things. Hermes Trismegistus. And he supposedly put together some things known as the Emerald Tablets. Now, I don't believe the Emerald Tablets ever existed either. But these Hermetics got together and they wrote some knowledge. And the most famous of this is As Above, So Below. Now, what they're saying is that anything that exists in the macrocosm exists in the microcosm, which is a brilliant, brilliant bit of knowledge to know. Anything that exists above exists below, which says that anything that I can do, you can do too. Anything that exists in the solar system exists right here on Earth. Anything that happens in the universe exists on the planet. Anything in nature exists in me. In other words, there is nothing that happens without that doesn't happen within. Now, this is extremely important. It's important for alchemy. It's important for everything because it says that there is nothing supernatural. And this is why I say I don't believe in the supernatural. Everything is natural. Everything is natural. And I think this is really lost upon most people who dwell in metaphysics. They miss this point. Now, why do I say the emerald tablets, blah, 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 probably aren't real? Because of the symbolism involved. Why emerald tablets? Why emerald tablets? Well, because the people who came up with this little myth were very clever. Why emerald tablets? Smyrna. Smyrna. Well, why Smyrna? Why emerald? Well, here's the reason. Because what they were doing, remember, was heresy, was blasphemous. Because by doing the work they were doing, we have a tendency to say, well, that couldn't have been that bad. But any one of these people saying the things they were saying could very literally have been executed, burned at the stake for what they were doing. And that is not hyperbole. They could have been thrown in dungeons, and most of all, they could have been impoverished for it. They would have absolutely forfeited their money, their stuff, and their family fortune would have been completely taken away from them. You see? This is a very important concept. This is how certain organizations, and I don't have to mention who, became incredibly wealthy. They usurped their property, their monies, they inherited their fiefdoms, because these people were playing around with fire by looking at other ways of thinking, because what they sought to do was to monopolize philosophies. And you can't do it. Certainly not in certain parts of the world nowadays, but people are trying to do that. They're trying to say, we want to legislate how you think. You're not supposed to be able to do that. Now, there are parts of the world today where they certainly do that, or try to. And look at what's happening. It's havoc. It's craziness. It is still today, in the 21st century, there are parts of the world where they want to tell people how to think and how to behave based upon those medieval ways of thinking, including right here in the U.S. of A. And we're seeing what's happening there. And that's why we have to fight against that. Hook, line, and sinker, tooth and nail. Crate and barrel. There we go. So, the point is, why emerald? Because it was said that when Lucifer cries, he cries tears of emeralds. So that's why, right? Because he cries these green tears, these tears of emerald. And why emerald? Because emeralds are the tears that are related to Venus, because Venus is the color of passion. Why? Because on the Tree of Life, that particular sephirah of Venus is green, because green is the color of copper, because copper is green when it patinas, it's green, and because it corrodes from the inside out. So it's very shiny on the outside, but it's corrodes on the, from the inside out, right? So it's considered, it corrupts from the inside out. And so, I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing we're talking about here. It's beautiful symbolism. And so it's passion, and that was the original sin, right? Was Eve. Ha! Blame it on her, why don't you? Where was Adam? What was he doing? I won't get into that. And the fact that he, you know, Eve says, here, try this. This original sin. My God, how despicable is that story, in my opinion. Let that be my opinion. But anyway, so the point is that that's why we have these emerald tablets, because they were created from the tears of Lucifer. And what was his big sin? He did not bow to Adam. Anyway, getting off track. So this is the whole Hermetic paradigm. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about is Hermeticism, is hiding this information, this incredible information about nature. And it's about nature itself, and basically saying, let us take nature out of the system of the indoctrination of religion. Let's move it away from religion and into science. And that's what original Hermeticism was about. And that's what the whole alchemical paradigm was about, saying, let us remove this from the realm of the religious paradigm, because that gums it up way too much. The whole concept of the home nucleus, the whole concept of everything was to say, forget about that. How are children born? What is this about children and you know, the creation of children? It's about real elementalism. It's about a man and woman come together, you know, and that sort of thing. I mean, a lot of ancient Egyptians believed that a child could be conceived through fellatio. Back to that word, right? It was an omen, but that could happen. So they had to be very careful. And of course, we know today that's impossible. And yet there are people today in certain sects that believe that kind of communion between men and women, can actually should be forbidden. Well, why? You know, why? And they will go back to this. I don't know if they go back to that old concept, but it's like, because it's unnatural. It's unnatural. Everything is unnatural. Everything that isn't natural is unnatural. And it's like, what does unnatural mean? What is the concept of unnatural? You know? And that's the whole point, is that as above, so below. You know. So this is the concept of Hermeticism, is really understanding the power of nature and realizing that humans have this ability to kind of convolute things and gum them up. Did you know that there was a molasses flood in Boston? I don't know when it was. I've forgotten. But people died? Now, that's humanity. You know, there can't be a molasses flood in nature. It doesn't happen because nature doesn't make molasses. But only humans can have a molasses flood, but not nature. Do you get my point? Maybe you don't. I don't know if there is a point there. But the idea is that in this concept of elementalism, we now have this ability with Tarot to understand it on a much deeper level. Now, I grabbed my Crowley deck. Now, I haven't used my Crowley deck since I invented my deck, but I love my Crowley deck. I studied this deck for 40 years, 45 maybe. I'm holding this card, and I'm thinking, wow, this deck is huge, first of all. It's much larger than my deck. I could have made my deck this big, but frankly, nah. But every card in a Tarot deck has many, many different correspondences, as it should have. Listen to this deck. This is a deck that says, respect me. Listen. Just riffling through this deck. That's the Crowley deck, the Aleister Crowley Thoth Tarot. The top deck card deck on this, I haven't shuffled this in decades, a decade at least. And here's the Ace of Swords. Well, the Ace of Swords, now here's the first thing. Swords are air. That's what they are. Wands are fire, elementally. Cups, water, makes sense. And earth, discs. Now, this is from magic. This is from magic. And this actually is taken from religion as well. These items were taken from religion. They were taken from the sacrament, right? From parts of the different parts of the Mass. So the plates were the platen, you know, the where they put the host on. I've been to several religious things. I didn't catch on fire. No one beat me, you know. I've been to synagogues. I've actually been in synagogues and sat through service. I've been to a Buddhist temple and sat through. So I've been to just about everything I could get to. Hindu temples. I've been to, and I've been fascinated with religion my whole life. I've been to one of the biggest mosques. We went to the biggest mosque in Cairo, the Salah al-Din Mosque, on a Eid, you know, and with my dad and his brother and his uncle. And what an experience that was. 10,000 people, men, actually 10,000 men on one thing. And I was being very challenging to my dad, you know. And I said, how come there are no women here? All the women are up there in the balcony. Why is that? I was 18, you know, and I said, what is that? That seems very, what is that? I don't see that. And he said, let me ask you. You know how we pray, right? We have to bend over and all that. He said, I said, yeah. He said, do you think you could think about God with a woman bending over in front of you? And I said, good point. You know, and I'm sure there's more to it than that, but that was a good point. I took that. You know, I said, okay, all right, good point. And so, you know, and he said, now shut up. My dad was a wonderful guy. He really was. But what an experience that was for me. One of the most moving experiences of my life. Because I'm an iconoclast, you know. It's like, come on, let's tear it down. You know, let's see what's really made of. But there was something there I had never experienced before with 10,000 people at one time. Really something in Cairo. You see things. You go do things. I've had experiences in midnight mass that was so moving to me with the pipe organ and the people and the sacrament. I of course did not take, communion, but it was you experience things and the gongs and the, you know, and the singing and the, I mean, and I knew all the songs, not all of them, but I knew a lot of them. Because I was raised in this country. There's movement there, and you find there's this community. There's something there, but I knew what it wasn't to me. But I also kind of, and then I was in an Episcopal mass, and I saw them raising the platen, and I saw them giving the cup and holding up the cup, and I thought, man, this is right out of Thoreau. This is out of Arthur Edwards' Waite deck. And I was just like, wow, this is fantastic to watch. And it was really moving for me. Fire, water, air, earth. In Thoreau, basically, people say, well, the wands are business, and the swords are trouble, and the cups are love, and the discs are money. And that's like, no, yeah, well, yeah. But it's much more than that. The elements are about so many things. You know, the wands, what are wands? Well, wands are anything that kind of gets us going. You know, think about anything that gets you riled up, fired up. You know, get fired up. Fired up. You think about the very term, getting fired up. There's about 1,000 different ways that we get fired up when you think about it. It can be a lot of things. Look at the world today. Cups. Cups are about more than just emotions. They're about passion. They're about drive. They can be about a lot of things. Things we care about. And they can get mixed up with fire as well. And here's the thing about elements. Fire and water don't mix. They're male and female, but we do know that male and female mix, don't we? And that's the key. They have to come together because they create air and earth. And fire is considered more male, and cups are considered more female. And they come together, and they don't get along, but they are drawn to come together and get along, and they do get along for a little bit. They kind of extinguish each other, but they come together and they're turbulent, and fire goes up and cups come down, and they create air and earth. And air and earth don't usually get along very well. You know, they're kind of brother and sister. They are brother and sister. So fire, those are the knights in Tarot. And in the Crowley deck, they are knights. They're not kings. They're knights. Why? Because they mosey on through. Did you know that in Tarot, Tarot is a matriarchal society? It should be. It's not always. That's a big secret, by the way. A secret that George Lucas knew. And that's why Princess Leia is really the one who is important, more important than Luke. When you stop and think about it, he is important, but he's a Jedi knight. He's a knight. He's not a king. He's not a prince. He's a knight, and she's a princess, you see. Princess. He did his studies with Joseph Campbell. So this is all wonderful stuff, and it's old. And this whole Dan Brown business with the whole Da Vinci Code and all that stuff, and the scion, you know, the scion of Jesus and the child and all that stuff, that's old. Crowley refers to it in his chariot card, that Jesus had a child. The drop of blood in the grail. That's exactly what that refers to. None of that was new to us who knew this deck, who understand the myth. But it's like, yeah, so what? We know that. Crowley knew that. I knew that. I knew that long before the book came out. And whether it was true or not is not important. And that's what the whole story of Parsifal is about, that Jesus had a child. And it's like, yeah, whether it's true or not is irrelevant. It's about the concept. And it's about the whole point. Do you know what the story of, we know what the Immaculate Conception is? What is the Immaculate Conception? It's not the virgin birth. The Immaculate Conception is that Mary was born without original sin, because the mother of Christ could not have been born in sin, so that she was wiped clean of original sin. I love that theory. And from what I understand, it was the Prophet Muhammad who came up with that idea. He said she can't have been born with it. And you can fact check me on that. I would appreciate that. But that's what I read, was that he said, yeah, I don't think she could have been born with original sin. You know, it's like, wow. But anyway, that's irrelevant. The whole point is that elementalism, the elements in Tarot, you can pick any card in a Tarot deck, major or minor arcana. And not only that, but the numbered cards each have their own elemental force attached to them, and then you add whatever suit they're in, so you have double elementalism, right? Isn't that something? When you think about that, so, I mean, it's like, wow. So you get to really kind of, so here is a card like the Eight of Cups. And you say, okay, the Eight of Cups, well, it's a cup, so it's water. But you say, what is the number eight? Well, the number eight, well, that's Mercury on the Tree of Life. Oh, my God. So what is Mercury? Well, Mercury, who? Mercury rules Gemini, right? So what is Gemini? Gemini's air. But Gemini also rules on the old system now. Don't get upset, because Gemini in the old system also rules Earth with Virgo. So I have Earth and Air. So here's Cups, Earth, and Air. But you see, the Eight of Cups is known as Indolence, but it also is Saturn in Pisces. So there's also Saturn, which is also Earth. So we have an earthy... Oh, my God, but it's, well, Saturn, well, why do I say Earth? Well, because Saturn rules Capricorn, but Saturn also rules Pisces. So wait a minute, we've got all this water, and we've got all this. So when you're doing Tarot, if you think about the elemental forces involved, and you know that there's a question involved, you could start building on these elemental forces, too. And you could say, what is the predominant element here? Or what are they asking about? Well, if this is about someone who's asking about, let's say, alcoholism, as this card often comes up for, I've seen it over the 50 years I've been working with Tarot. 50, yeah, about. Well, with people. Been working with it for lots longer than that. But in dealing with clients, and this card Endless comes up with people who are trying to quit, and they're just so tired of it. And it comes up with, please, I've got to stop. Or drugs. And you come up with this card, and it's just so hard. And you're looking at this earth energy, and you're looking at this water energy, and you're looking, and you can see the pain that it has caused them. And if you look at the card itself, it's so brilliant. Now, in my deck, it's a guy sitting at a table with a lot of empty glasses and bottles. And he's hung over. He's miserable. He's got an ice pack on his head. And you can see he's thinking to himself, I'm never going to do this again, but we know human nature. And he's miserable, and we know he's going to do it again. This is the power of elemental understandings in these. I'll pick another card at random here of this wonderful deck. Seven of Cups. Well, the one right before it. This is the botch. Venus and Scorpio. Well, this is a card that you look at it and you kind of want to, you're thinking to yourself, am I going to be sick? Nauseated. Here's this dripping green iridescent fluid coming out of Seven Cups. Yet it's something about it is a little bit appealing, alluring, because the liquid dripping from it is probably very sweet and probably addictive. And the more you drink of it, the more you want, but the more you drink, the sicker you get. This is the power of Tarot. Well, it's Venus and Scorpio, right? And Scorpio is ruled by Mars, and Mars rules Aries, which is fire, and Scorpio, which is water, and they don't get along. But that's the power of Scorpio, drawing us into something that just, turns us upside down, that turns us inside out, that makes us unbelievably uncomfortable. I have my full moon in Scorpio. Within 3 minutes of the full moon waxing. Trust me, I know this energy. When I turn over the rock, all sorts of things scurry out that thrill me, but also terrify me. I know this card. I know this feeling. It's poisonous after a while. My Seven of Cups is the Venus de Milo, in a way. Venus on the half shell, as I call it, but she's standing on the back of a deadly scorpion. And there are seven cups, only three of which you can actually touch without being killed. That's my card. Because I took the cards and my knowledge of them and made them more accessible, more understandable. But that, to me, is elementally what this card shows us. That this is a card that you have a chance at something here. But debauchery is about getting caught in something so delicious that it takes you down with it. Or you can experience it and get away with it if you're lucky. But otherwise, it destroys you, you see. So that's elementalism. You get into the elements in the cards. And that's what Tarot was about. Originally, Tarot was there as a mnemonic device to store this incredible amount of knowledge. By the time you got done with Tarot, understanding it, and they would quiz you. Man, they would quiz you. What about this? Why is this symbol here? Every symbol in the deck. For example, in the Arthur Edward Waite deck, you see there are pomegranates in the drapes behind the priestess. Why are they there? Why pomegranates? Well, because the priestess is virginal, supposedly, and she has her eggs. And because the pomegranate is the symbol of ovum, right? Yes, or ova. Not ovum, ova, plural. And because, you know, young girls have literally millions of eggs in them when they're born. Well, before they're born, they have millions. They're absolutely fertile beyond comprehension. That is the concept of that. And if you don't know that, and you're asked that question, you don't get to graduate. You're not the magus. You don't get to do that. Now, I figured out why there's a baboon in Aleister Crowley's Magus card. And I'm not going to say it here because maybe I will write a book before I die about this deck. I know why there's a baboon, and I don't think anyone else does. Now, that's not to say nya, nya, nya. It's saying I'm obsessive. And it hit me one day, and I almost think I almost had a stroke. Because it was so brilliant. He was a genius. I'm no genius. Well, maybe I am. And I don't mean like, oh, look at me. I'm just saying, I'm obsessive. And I think that's all it is. It's just being obsessive and following these little red, strings. You follow them. And then you suddenly pull and the sweater comes apart and you're looking at something that's so obvious that you can't help but see what it is. I didn't mean that I am one. I'm just saying that I am so obsessive, but I discovered what the baboon is. And what that did is it unlocked his entire deck. And it said, here it is. The deck is now naked. Now what are you going to do with it? And once I realized that, I said, okay, now I get to do my own deck. Because I understood his deck completely to the point where I said, okay, now it's up to me to do something for me and other people to invent a deck that is usable and is more friendly. Because his deck is not all that friendly. It's a good deck. I love this deck. But I use my deck because it makes sense to me. And this is not a thing for my deck because there's not even a way for you to buy it. Someday, maybe again. Boy, I went crazy when I designed it. I started drawing in it. I think I drew straight for 3 months. 3 months. I think if enough people clap, I'll put a way back for it to be bought. It's not that expensive. I mean, it costs me to do it, but I don't know. It's a print, and then it self-print thing out of Hong Kong. But they're lovely cards. I mean, lovely from the standpoint that they're well printed, very nicely done. But the point is that the elements are very important in everything, and that's what Hermeticism is about. That's what it's all about. Oh, I'm really gone long. Okay, so sorry about that. I got caught up. I do that every now and then. Okay, so hey, thanks for listening. Hey, until next week. I just think about these things. They're wonderful. Until next we meet, peace and love. Talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade.